great waste from the wine industry is being turned into carbon-soaking biochar, which also enriches the soil. But experts say there's enormous potential to do more. Biochar is the lightweight black residue remaining after organic material is heated to high temperatures without oxygen. The technical term for this is pyrolysis. The remaining matter absorbs carbon, and biochar is recognised by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, as it safely stores up to half the carbon in its source material for hundreds and even thousands of years. Professor Stephen Joseph, an internationally renowned expert on biochar, has been invited to New Zealand by the Biochar Network here to speak with people in the Marlborough region wine industry. He'll also address the Society of Soil Science and attend field days. Also with us is the Central Otago grape grower James Dicey, who's been making and using biochar from grapevine cuttings for 8 years. Good morning to you, James.
Good morning. How are you doing, Catherine?
Good, thank you. We're just trying to re-establish with Stephen. We'll be back to him in a moment. So perhaps you want to start, James, by telling me what you're already doing on your property.
So we're incorporating biochar with the compost we make from grape mark, which is the byproduct of the wine industry. We did some research a number of years ago when we were looking at biochar, statistical proper research rather than just having a bit of a look, and satisfied ourselves that actually this material is actually a solution to some of the challenges that our local soils actually presented us. And we were very happy with the results of that and consequently scaled up production.
So you were using it as a nutrient for the vineyard?
Well, not so much as a nutrient, but more as a sponge. When the process of pyrolysis occurs, what gets left behind actually is a great big sponge, both for nutrients and for water. So a lot of the material that you have in your compost, which is available to the plants, the soils here are not poor is not the great word, but they're not very well developed. And because our rainfall is very low, there's not a lot of capacity in the soils to actually hold onto those nutrients from the compost. And as a consequence, they tend to disappear, either volatilize back into the environment again if you put them on the surface, or disappear through the soil profile and not become available to the vine. So what the biochar allowed us to do is to absorb the nutrients from the compost, and because it's so porous and so much like a sponge, it holds onto them and makes not only the carbon that gets sequestered, but also those nutrients become available to the vine over a long period of time.
So it was an enhancement to the growing conditions, right, that was the initial motivator. And then, of course, the fact it can act as a sink in effect or as a sequester of carbon, a secondary bonus. Can you just explain, you're in Bannockburn, contracting to a range of vineyards, I think, Mount Difficulty. Pinot Noir lovers, their ears will be perking up. And 7 or 8 years you've been doing this now. What's involved in the actual process, however, and how did you start with the equipment needed for pyrolysis?
So the first time we actually did it, we had a guy that brought the biochar with him to do the experiment. After we did that, we looked at the available technology and chose something called a Big Roo, which is a pyrolysis oven that came out of originally developed in Australia. And we chose that because it looked like an ability to really finely control the amount of heat and also the amount of oxygen in the burner, which are two critical components. We built the Big Roo at quite significant cost used old grapevines that we'd removed when we were changing varieties or dealing with disease, or and it put to one side with a view to trying to reuse those back into our vineyards. The Big Roo turned out to be really, really good at making very, very high quality biochar, but very, very labour intensive and took a very long time. So we then went to a thing called a Contiki kiln, which is basically a cone, which is a much, much lower tech solution. It doesn't create char that's quite so good, but basically you burn the old grapevines that we've removed, put them into this Contiki, biochar oven, and effectively through the way of the shape of the cone, what it does is it creates a pyrolysis process, not with the same level of control as the big roux, and then you create the biochar from that. You quench it once it's finished, let the water drain back out of it again, and then you've got some great char material ready to go and ready to be incorporated in your compost.
So what has been the effect on the soil, or the operational effect of the material you now have around your vines?
So there's a thing called cation exchange capacity, a bit of a technical term for how much nutrients the soil can hold on a long-term basis. A lot of the soils here, I deal with some of the mine tailings down here in Bannockburn. They're 160-year-old soils, so incredibly young, incredibly abused as a result of the miners extracting the gold from the sluicings here. And one of our vineyards, Pipe Clay Terrace, very, very, very low in nutrients. And we've got some sands here that have been blown in from the Caro Gorge, 20,000-year-old soils, again, very, very low nutrient-holding capacity. By adding the biochar to the compost, what we've done is we've increased the buffering capacity of the soil. It's made the vineyards a lot easier to manage. It's made them a lot more resilient. The ability to hold that extra water and extra nutrients effectively in solution available for those vines for an extended period of time means that we don't have to add as much to the soil. We don't have to use as much artificial fertilizer, as many artificial chemicals to help the vines grow in those very, very poor soils. So the biochar for us has been really quite revolutionary to increasing the ability of the soils to provide the nutrients to the vines so that they continue to grow and create great quality Pinot Noir for Mount Difficulty, for our own brand Dicey, and for a number of other clients around here.
Stay with us, James. Just listening to you, you were mainly using the old vine material itself that had been ripped up for one reason or rather. Is there other stuff that you could use to make biochar with?
You can pretty much use any biological material, charcoal, so creating it from any material. There have been biochar created from straw. We've tried it with waste cardboard. We've tried it with pine, and they all work. We've actually found that the grapevines, which is quite hard and really dense, it's quite a hard wood, actually works the best. Having consistent size wood and consistent size material makes the burning process really easy. We tried layering cardboard and the grapevine cuttings, and we've had straw in there as well. But if you don't get the process right and you don't add the material at the correct time, you end up with ash, which most people will be familiar with in the little hot burners. And that's not what you want. The material's gone too far then, and you've lost the charcoal. The pyrolysis has gone too far. So having the ability to have that consistent material makes a big difference. But it can be used with a whole range of other what are perceived as being waste materials, whether it be wood chip, whether it be straw, whether it be anything else can actually be used in this process as well. That's biological. That can go through that pyrolysis process.
Stay with us, James, if you would. Thank you. James Dicey, who is in Bannockburn and working in the industry there, as we said, a number of significant labels. Professor Stephen Joseph is with us now, and thank you, Stephen, for being with us. Can we just establish your credentials at first? There's quite a list. I'll rattle them off. You're a Fellow of the Australian Institute of Energy, awarded an Order of Australia for your long service in renewable energy and the biochar industry, Senior Advisor to both commercial, government and non-government organisations, and in renewable energy, sustainable agriculture and forestry. James has been talking us through the purposes of biochar in the vineyards to help with absorption. Can you speak to its use in the sequestration of carbon? And could you speak a little bit more perhaps to what this pyrolysis process involves? Does it have any emissions in its own right?
So let's start maybe with an introduction to how you make biochar. There's a number of different ways you can make it. You can make it using the big roux, which I actually designed, or you can make it with the Contiki, or you can actually make it in a very modern appliance that has very low emissions. And of course, the lower the emissions, the more expensive the pyrolysis equipment occurs. And really, the sort of equipment that you use is no different to some of the modern wood-fired boilers that they use for drying and for food processing. There's a chap called Miles Pope who uses a low-quality biochar that comes out of a wood boiler that it's at a sawmill. So it's an old technology, and what's happened as we've improved our understanding of how to convert wood very efficiently with low emissions, then you probably get lower emissions from a modern pyrolysis kiln than you do from a diesel truck.
Okay, so the answer is it depends on the equipment that you're using. I guess if you're making the case, there's obviously multiple cases for its use in viticulture or horticulture, but if you're making the case for sequestration, you've probably got to look at the whole picture, the whole balance of emissions, and that's why I asked. Can we talk about its ability as a sequestration vehicle, however, please?
Right. Emissions are actually important for the issue of sequestration, and that's. What they call life cycle assessment, that you look at the total amount of energy required to actually produce a product and how much carbon you can actually sequester after taking into account the energy required to actually make the product. And the interesting thing about biochar compared with most other technologies, including solar and wind, is that it's carbon negative. And it's fascinating why it's carbon negative. What happens when you put biochar into the ground or you put it into compost? It actually absorbs organic matter that's given out by the microbes and the plants. That's a simple explanation. And those organic molecules go inside the pores of the char. And then the biochar reacts with the minerals in the soil, and the minerals form a coating over the biochar, and they actually lock up that carbon. Now, if you don't have the carbon locked up, take for instance compost. I mean, normally after 5 years, 90 to 95% of all the carbon that's in compost is goes back into the atmosphere as CO2. Whereas with the biochar, over 100 years, you might lose 10% of the carbon. But the key thing about biochar, if it's made correctly, is that you see the carbon content of the soil increase dramatically. We just published a very nice paper in Nature, which is one of the top journals in the climate area. And what we were able to show is that if you add a little bit of biochar every year, especially if you add it with compost, you keep on building up that carbon in the soil until you reach a maximum, of course. There's only a certain amount of carbon you can put in a soil. And the more carbon you put in the soil, of course, the more productive the soil is, and it holds water better. You find that the pathogen loading decreases dramatically, and the abundance of growth-promoting microorganisms increase. It's been quite amazing. I come from industry originally, and when I retired, I went into academia. But over the last 15 years, there's been over 15,000 peer-reviewed papers that have been published. In fact, there's more papers on biochar than there is on compost now. So the science is really well understood, a lot better than many other areas in science. And of course, the International Panel for Climate Change has recognised biochar as one of the most effective ways of drawing down carbon from the atmosphere.
Can we be clear that it's the soil then that does the carbon sequestering, not the biochar itself? The biochar is like the catalyst for that?
It's both.
Okay.
I'm trying to make it simple without getting into large amounts of science. So on the surface of the biochar, you get a whole series of very complex biological and chemical reactions that help sequester carbon. But the carbon that is actually given out, so when a plant's in the soil, it they call it root exudates. In other words, carbon, like sugars, are actually exuded from the roots of the plants. Now, normally those molecules would be oxidized and they go into the air as CO2. But what happens is when those compounds come out of the plants, they actually go inside the biochar and the biochar locks them up. Okay. And then because the biochar reacts with the soil minerals and becomes part of the aggregate structure, then the that extra carbon is locked up inside the biochar.
It's absolutely fine, Stephen. Because it's important because that again, we're looking at the life cycle and we're looking at the security, I guess, of where CO2 is locked up and how easily it can be released. It comes down to the same issue when it comes to the planting of trees, right? So that makes sense. I want to ask you about the potential, twofold potential, because it has multiple uses. It's used as an animal feed supplement as well. And we heard about James using it to support moisture retention in the vineyards as well. But if the IPCC is recognising it as a sequesterer of carbon, is there the potential at scale to bring it into the same sort of system as we have with the ETS with the planting of trees? Is that possible and viable or not?
Yes, it's very viable. Politically, getting it through, of course, is a bit of a challenge. So if you look at what's happening with biochar in Australia, producers of biochar are being paid up to $250 a ton if it's a high-carbon biochar. So that's really boosting the industry in Australia. There's a lot of projects that are going forward because biochar is not cheap to make unless you have very large plants. The technology, the large-scale technology is not well developed. The smaller-scale technology works very well now. We're working with a group here on a portable one-ton-an-hour plant, which we're starting to produce now. And what you've got to do is to get the scale. And the only country that's got the scale has been China. And I've been involved in that program in China. I'm a visiting professor at Nanjing Agricultural University. And we don't know what's happened since COVID, but we suspect that there's somewhere between 200 and 500,000 tons of biochar that's actually produced in China. And that's incorporated into fertilizers, it's incorporated into compost. They use it for remediating contaminated land. There's a lot of contaminated land with lead and cadmium and chromium that's come from pollution from factories that goes into the waterways. So China has a high level of support for the biochar industry.
Okay.
And that's why it's grown so significantly over a very short period of time.
Can each of you speak to the potential here? Because you need the raw inputs, and we've heard those can be varied. We heard James explaining that his experience has been that, for whatever reason, the removed sort of vines themselves have been the most useful and consistent input for him. But there's this, I think there's something like 80,000 tonnes worth of grape marc produced each year in Marlborough. Can someone explain what that is? Is that the grapes itself, or is that the actual vineyard? What exactly is grape marc, please?
That's the leftovers from the pressing of the grapes.
Is it the skins or what? No?
Yeah, and the seeds. And okay. It's small amounts of wood that is extracted as well from the cuttings. Grape marc's wonderful. I've just been doing a whole lot of test work making different sorts of grape marc biochar. Other people have done work with it and got really good results. So that's a fantastic feedstock. When you start talking about feedstocks, New Zealand has a huge amount of biomass, and especially pine wood. Pine wood's probably not the best material to use, but what we've been able to do is you can pre-treat the pine to give you a high-quality biochar. So I've been working with my colleagues here on methods of how to improve the properties of pine, because there's so much pine waste produced in New Zealand. Bark can be a great feedstock for biochar. In fact, the best feedstock we've found is poultry litter. To tell people why poultry litter is so good. And the best part of poultry litter are basically the seeds that have gone through the animal and the chicken feathers. Chicken feathers make absolutely amazing biochar. And I won't go into the reasons why. So there are many different feedstocks. Dairy manure makes really good biochar. Making biochar is both a science and an art. I've been doing it for 45 years. I still keep on learning how to make better biochars. And I always say to companies and that I help and my researchers is you need to understand the processes. It need to understand the interrelationship between crops and soils and different sorts of biochar. But more importantly, you've actually got to make it. You've got to understand that there is an art. Okay. There is the feel for making good biochar. It's like making a good coffee.
Or a good wine. I've got to leave it there, Stephen. Just listening to you and listening to James earlier, it sounds like it would be an industry-wide collaboration and perhaps with some incentives attached to getting this going. It's going to be a little bit challenging perhaps to do it individually, business by business. But thank you for explaining the potential and all the best for the Field Days speech you're giving and also to your input to the Biochar Network here. That's Professor Stephen Joseph, James Dicey with us also from Bannockburn.